Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chick Flick Chat on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lucy Weston. Thank you for joining us for Chick Flick Chat. It's a spin-off feature of the popular life and style website, herewearewithlucy.com. I invite you to stop by and check out the articles. Be sure to subscribe so you're alerted to new content. It's free and your information is never sold or shared. Plus, we know you are busy and prefer quality to quantity, so we don't bug you with constant updates. The basis of our mission is to inspire your independence, support your personal growth, and make your busy day better, brighter, and easier. It's Saturday, August 6, 2011, and this episode of Chick Flick Chat is coming to you from the new Blog Talk Radio show page, where we've already chatted about the films Valentine's Day and The Switch. You can find all of our previous Chick Flick Chats by going to herewearewithlucy.com and clicking the Chick Flick Chat page. And that's where you will find links to all of our previous chats like Eat, Pray, Love, It's Complicated, and the Housewives reality shows and more. Also, the Here We Are talk show featuring guests who are experts in their fields continues at its original channel. And again, you can check that out at herewearewithlucy.com. We have great guests coming up for the fall. I'm very, very exciting. So it's going to be an informative season, and I look forward to it, and I hope you'll join us. Today, my Chick Flick Chat co-host, Susan Ragazzo, and I are chatting about the latest Woody Allen film, Midnight in Paris. And as you may know, we typically chat about women's roles and roles for women in movies that have been recently released on DVD and on demand. But for this movie, we picked Midnight in Paris because, oh my goodness, for this Chick Flick Chat, this is the movie of the summer. And seeing it really makes you feel like you've been on a wonderful trip. So we thought it would work well with our August theme, which is timing is everything. And it's a seamless fit, so plus it's Paris. Who can go wrong? Anyway, let's start chatting. Hello, Susan. Are you ready to discuss, dissect, and dish the details of today's film?
Hi, Lucy. I am ready. This was a fun film, lots of layers, and we got a lot to talk about.
Oh, you are so right with that. Listeners, as always, Susan and I have not discussed this film. If you want to jump in on the discussion, you can dial 909-265-9175 and press number 1 if you'd like to talk, and I'll pick you up. This is a spoiler alert for all the listeners. If you haven't yet seen the movie, be forewarned that we cover the whole film, including the ending. So, you know, again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, you might want to wait and listen to the show on the download. Okay, Susan, tell us the premise.
Okay, the synopsis is from the movie website that I'm about to read. A romantic comedy set in Paris about a family that goes there because of business, and two young people who are engaged to be married in the fall have experiences there that change their lives. It's about a young man's great love for a city, Paris, and the illusion people have that a life different from theirs would be much better. It stars Kathy Bates as Gertrude Stein, Marion Cotillard as Adriana, Rachel McAdams as Inez, Michael Sheen as Paul, Owen Wilson as Gil, and Corey Stoll as Ernest Hemingway, along with many others.
Thank you, Susan. Okay, let's begin at the beginning. And the opening scene, I guess you could call it B-roll, but it's just so beautiful that it tells everything about the city and every place you'd want to go. We see all kinds of scenic shots of Paris set to the background, very French music. Absolutely stunning.
Absolutely. I've never been to Paris, So for me, that was just like a huge glimpse into the lifestyle and the architecture, and just so beautiful. It made me want, like, I decided in that moment that Paris is on the bucket list, you know?
No doubt. And I have actually been to most of those places that they showed. So on the opposite side of you, I want to go back now. And I always want to go back to Paris, but it was just so beautiful. And the way it's filmed in the montage with the music, and you just, it sets the tone, obviously, for the whole movie, Midnight in Paris, but it sets you up to, I felt, like you were really there.
Oh, yes. I agree completely. You totally get immersed in the scenery. No doubt about it.
So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's really breathtaking. And if you haven't been to Paris, any of the listeners, and to you, Susan, and we should go. We should plan a girls' trip
right.
and go.
Our next chick flick chat will be located in Paris.
The next flick chick, maybe we'll do it right from Paris. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I would encourage that all you have to do is watch the first, whatever, 6 to 8 minutes, and you'll know all the places you'll want to see. And even if you say, well, I'm seeing it on film, there's nothing like it. As captured and beautiful as it was on this piece of footage, there's nothing like the being in person and walking down those streets. Okay, having said that, that's our little travel plug for Paris. We first see Owen Wilson as Gil, walking with Rachel McAdams, who plays Inez, as you said, and it appears like they are a united, happy couple. And his opening line, they're walking and talking about living in Paris, and she says, "You're in love with a fantasy." And he answers, "I'm in love with you," which is somewhat, in that moment he believes it. And she, it's a foreshadowing, I think, for what's going to happen here in their relationship and in his life. So did you pick up on that?
I didn't pick up on that particular line, but that feeling, that foreshadowing that you're talking about, you totally sense that. Because
that it's coming.
From the beginning, they're happy. We see that. But you definitely feel that there are big differences between them. You definitely feel it. So I absolutely felt that, even though I didn't pick up on that specific line. Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting that that's like one of the very first lines, and they're using it in the trailer too, which really does sets the tone for everything. And they're at Monet's Gardens, and the scenery is just beautiful. So I won't get stuck on the scenery. I mean, we have so much to cover, and to the listeners, this may be a little bit all over the place because the movie is just packed with things to talk about. So I hope we can cover everything. We learn he's a writer. And that they're engaged, and they're currently living in Beverly Hills. He's working in the movie industry, but he really has this long, unfulfilled desire to live in Paris. And he expresses regret about not doing so, not moving there earlier in his life, and maybe trying to write the great novel. So we know that he's dealing with a level of discontent.
Yeah. And he really, being a writer, he's very connected to that time period and the great writers and the great artists, almost very whimsically. It's almost the way he talks about it. It's like he's almost living it. He's very engrossed in that time period, and being in Paris, of course, it naturally brings it all out for him.
Right, and which is very interesting because I think we'll bring this back around at the end. Something you just said. At lunch, they go to lunch. Her parents are in town. They're there for this. I don't know how long they were there for, because it seemed like they were there for quite a long time on
right?
this wonderful
right.
trip. But they're at lunch, and they bump into a couple named Carol and Paul. And we immediately see the disconnect between Gil and Inez. And it's so apparent when she's saying they get invited to go to Versailles. And she's like, "Oh, that sounds wonderful." And he's like, no, remember we have that thing? You know, we got to go do it. She's like, "What thing?" And it's the typical, like, one part of the couple wants to do something, the other one doesn't. And she's just gung-ho. And he's like, no, I don't want to go. Oh, okay. Well, obviously she twists his arm. And they make plans to get together to go to Versailles. So they end up, you know, they go to, and I thought that was interesting because you see Carol and Paul seem like a very united couple, and that they're like the perfect, you know, husband and wife, and then you see, but we learn, you know, things are different with that too. Nothing is as it seems.
Yes, absolutely. And we also learn, I'm pretty sure it was at this point in the movie, that Inez had a huge crush on Paul at one point, which again is a foreshadowing.
Yes, when she was in college, yeah. She tells him that when he's saying, like, why do we have to go, and when they're alone, and she's like, well, I had a huge crush, and he knows so many things, and they end up at Versailles. And
yeah.
we learn that Paul is a know-it-all in the worst sense of the term. And,
yeah.
the, you know, as they're all hanging out together at Versailles and taking the tour, and again, the footage, spectacular, Inez mm-hmm. puts Gil on the spot and says, you know, it basically says, why don't you show Paul your work, your writing?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we learn that his book that he's been working on is about a character who runs a nostalgia shop. And they all, what's a
yeah.
nostalgia? That's what they called it, right? Am I correct with that?
Yes, they did. Yes.
The nostalgia shop. Okay,
right.
When I was making my notes,
mm-hmm.
I was like, is that what they referred to it? So, and it takes place in the 20s in Paris. That's what his book is about. So we're
exactly.
setting up for what's to come. And again, you know, we'll get there. So, and one of the characters, and I believe it was Paul, who is not wrong about a lot of his knowledge. He seems to be
yeah.
right about most things.
Yeah.
He has this comment that nostalgia is denial.
Interesting. Yes. Do you believe that?
And say again?
Do you believe that?
I don't know if I believe it, but I think it's – I think maybe a little bit, but I think the question it begs to be answered is Gil is already in denial. He's writing a book. If this is true – and nostalgia does equate to denial. He's already in denial about everything in his own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's coming out through
yeah.
his work, his creativity, what's
okay.
going on the page. We don't know.
Okay.
Obviously, we can't read the book and the movie, but we're learning that this is what's happening. At least that's my impression.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely I see that, absolutely. I didn't connect with that. Now that you're saying it, it totally makes sense.
You know, and this is one of the underlying themes of the film, that people are not happy. I think you read in the premise that there's an illusion that people have that life different from their own would be much better. And nostalgia comes in the fact of thinking in the past, you know, either generations or decades or centuries about
mm-hmm.
where do you want to be and when do you want to live. And if I had only lived whatever, you know, input the time frame, my life would be such and such. You never think your life would be worse. You think your life would be
sure.
better.
Sure, of
so,
course.
So, you know, this is the underlying, this is how the whole part, and when I, you know, when I wrote the copy for doing Chick Flick Chat, I realized that this is a Cinderfella fantasy.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Instead of Cinderella, obviously. But so, okay. So they're hanging out together, and one night Gil begs off the plan to go dancing, and he opts to walk the streets of Paris instead. He's a bit drunk, and he sits down on the steps of a church, and the clock strikes midnight, a
mm-hmm.
la Cinderella,
exactly.
or in this case, Cinderfella. Okay.
Yeah.
So we hear, and then up pulls this. It's like a was it? Oh no, it was like an old car, like a
1920s taxi almost.
Yes. And he gets, and they're like, come on, it's a party, it's a party. And he's like, what? I don't know you people. And he gets, anyway, he ends up, they cajole him, he gets in the car. And it takes him on this journey. So it's almost like Cinderella's coach and you know, sans
sure.
the mice turned into horses. And so he, you know, he gets in the car and he ends up at this fabulous party and he meets all these people. He meets F. Scott
mm-hmm.
Fitzgerald and Zelda Fitzgerald and Cole Porter's playing the music, and he's recognizing all these people, and you're kind of like thrown into it with him. Like, well, what is he doing? Did he pass out on the step? Is he dreaming?
Yeah.
You know, what is going on here? But you do, as the viewer, and tell me if you felt this way, that you're like, oh, I want to be at that party.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Who, you know, there's that wonderful question out there. If there was one person that you could have a drink with and ask questions to from history, who would it be? This is the perfect example of him having that kind of opportunity, except he's not limited to that one historical figure.
Right.
You know,
so,
I was sitting there thinking, how awesome, what questions would I ask these people? You know, it was amazing.
And he's doing the same thing. Because at first he's
yeah.
he's in shock, and the shock sort of turns
yeah.
into an acceptance where he's like, okay, I'm here. I'm gonna. How is this possible? But you know, the fun really begins in the movie at this point, and this is the journey
mm-hmm.
within a journey for Gil. You know, he's on this
yeah.
journey in Paris. He's on a journey of his own life and writing the book. But now he's in this other time warp, if you will, of this journey, and we're not sure as the viewer whether or not this is fantasy or reality. Is this really happening? And that's
yeah.
is one of the things that I was alluding to what you said earlier about it, I think that was sort of the beauty of this film, is that we don't really know whether this is happening for quite a while. You know, you're kind of like with him through this, so there's always that what's going to happen feeling. And of course, that's the brilliance of Woody Allen.
Exactly. And as a viewer, you know what? You, in the beginning, you're like, what's going on? But after a short time, you don't care how he got there. You don't care that he can keep going back. You just care that it's happening.
That's a very good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Because
he
does go back.
Kind of interesting.
And wasn't there a moment for you where you're thinking like, well, what if the clock's going to strike? What if the car doesn't pull up? But the car does pull up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly. And that's when you just cease to care how it's happening. You're just excited to see that it's happening.
And
really
and his,
cool.
Right, and his shock and confusion sort of turns into, you know, he's just thrilled now. And there's a funny scene, and I thought it was very humanizing, where he's laying in bed thinking, I'm Gil Bellows from Pennsylvania. Little Gil Bellows sat with Hemingway. And he's talking, and it's just very sweet. And Owen Wilson does a fabulous job from the first scene of the movie all the way through. Really, really nice job. Okay, he meets Hemingway. He meets the Fitzgeralds, Cole Porter, Picasso, Gertrude Stein, Salvatore Dali, and more. And, you know, we were sort of discussing, like, what's really going on here? He's having these intimate conversations with them. And, okay, we're just going to throw it all out there at this point, because there's really no way to follow along at this point just other than jump into what is some kind of time continuum, time warp, fantasy journey going on.
Yeah. What I thought was really nice about this is not only is he fulfilling a dream, let's say, this living in Paris in the 1920s with all of these wonderful historical characters, but he also finds support within these people to help him finish his novel, because we know that he's not getting present-day support. His wife thinks he should ditch the novel. Everybody thinks he's crazy for writing the novel. He has this flourishing Hollywood career. But it's within these characters in history where he finds the support that he needs, and I thought that was quite beautiful.
Which is a very good point, Susan, and that goes back to the fantasy thing of, and I guess I should bring this in now because of what you just said is so good. Is this really happening, or is this in his imagination, or is this what he's writing in his book? There are all these options going on. So, yes, is he being influenced, or is what he already knows about these people, because he's already well-versed on all of them, is that, and it's his imagination of what Paris would be like in the 20s, and that's what's also influencing him, because he opens up himself as a portal to having changes and growing and being creative. And Hemingway does say, when he first meets Hemingway and they're talking about writing, he says, no subject is terrible if the story is true and the prose is clean and honest.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that Gil, at that point, was not really writing a true story, because we come to learn after he cleans it up and he shows it to Gertrude Stein and she gives him guidance and he's doing a second draft and all these things are happening, that he's actually taking his prose and making it clean and honest, which it might not have been so much so. But he wasn't living an honest life for himself.
Yeah, exactly. And throughout that time, we do see him cleaning up his act, let's say, and starting to make recognition that his present-day life isn't all it's cracked up to be in terms of not living his truth.
Right, he is not living it. And he's living in this Hollywood illusion of being a writer and, you know, all that stuff that's all just fake. And I thought it was interesting, just to go a little bit more with that, is that when he goes back to see Hemingway in one of his trips, and to find it's the Polydor bar where Hemingway was having drinks, it's gone. And what is it? It's a laundromat.
Yeah.
So it's like things are coming out in the wash, cleaning, all these, this, you know. So I thought, because it could have been anything. Woody Allen could have made it anything.
True.
It could have been
true.
A coffee bar. It could have been an abandoned building. It could have been a hotel. It ended up being a laundromat. All right, just my observation. Yeah. Okay, moving on.
No, that was nice. I like that.
and okay, we have 10 minutes, Susan. We had a lot to cover.
Okay,
I knew this is a lot. Okay, let's talk about walking in the rain. Again, cleaning, cleansing, cleansing the soul, shedding things. It's a reoccurring thing throughout. It's, you know, he wants to walk with Inez. She is totally closed off to it.
Absolutely. Why would you want to walk in the rain, she says, and get all wet, and they're running from the rain. And you feel bad for the guy. He wants to really experience the whole atmosphere, and he's just being dragged down by this.
And as the more experience he's having on the flip side, which is Paris in the 20s, the more apparent his life in the present day is falling apart, or he's becoming more disillusioned, and it's, you know, the curtain's being drawn back. So we meet Adriana, this beautiful woman. Marion Cotillard plays the part, and it's, you know, she's in the Paris of the 20s, and she's Picasso's lover, and she's been the lover of other artists, and she has very little. She has a different ambition for her life, but it's a similar discontent to Inez when it comes to men. That in their present-day life, Inez is just sort of going along to get along, and so is Adriana.
You know what? I feel like they were both settling. Inez is with Gil because he's just this Hollywood, flourishing Hollywood writer. He's making good money. And Adriana's sleeping with these married artists and writers from the 20s. They both obviously find an allure to the creativity and the lifestyle that brings to their respective men, and that's why they're kind of hanging around with them. You know, they're not necessarily attracted to the men, but the lifestyle.
Exactly. And Inez is off doing whatever. She's impressed with Paul and, you know, taking a lover, and we find out, which, you know, okay, spoiler alert, there it is. okay, so we want to live, she wants to live in the 1800s, the Belle Epoque era. I'm talking about Adriana. And so she's even in the Paris of the 20s, where it's supposed to have been so beautiful and enchanting and everyone is so creative, she's not even happy there. She wants to go back to a previous time. So, it's again, it brings it back to, you know, people having this illusion, and it's just this reoccurring theme which goes on and on. And she does eventually get her dream to stay, and she's going to design ballet costumes, and she gets to stay in a previous time, and she says to Gil when she makes the decision, but the present is dull.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand it, because to him, her present time is Paris in the 20s, which is where he wants to be, so how could it be dull?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, again, it really highlights all this, you know, different stuff that everybody goes through. They're in the museum, and now we're in present day, and they're looking at the Picasso picture, which is what is supposed to have been of Adriana. And Inez, Paul's going on about it, and Gil offers up information he learned back in the 20s from Picasso about it's very clever, about the painting, and she just shuts him down. Everybody looks at him like he's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, he's the only one in the know there.
He is the only
one. It was a great scene.
And again, it's like sources and how things happen. And we see him, he's growing as a writer and a person.
Yeah.
And he's bringing his knowledge between the two eras. He's using what he knew in the present day in the past, because we see him sit down with Salvatore Dali and Brunel and Ray Mann, and he gives them each tips about what they should be doing about painting and then film and photography, so that we know that those things actually happen in culture at some point in all of each respective man's careers. So what's really happening? Is this a time continuum? Is he actually living? Is there two simultaneous errors, time going on, you know, timelines going on? Is he in a time warp? Is he really affected? We don't know. I mean, the answer is really what you think with this film.
Exactly.
And your impression. I was taking it through the first time I saw this, and I saw this twice. You only saw it one time, right?
Yes, once.
Okay, the first time I was sort of like, oh, okay. The second time I'm like, no, I think there is a time continuum here. But because there is some things that are affecting both of them, let me be clear. There are things that are affecting both time frames that he's the conduit for.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, with Adriana and the earrings.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going. You read my mind.
That was one thing. He never would have done that unless he read about it. But then, you know, it's just like cyclical. You know, it never would have happened if he didn't read the story, and the story wouldn't have been written if it never happened. And and we see it, like you said, with Dali giving them tips about some of the pieces they could create. Would that have happened if he wasn't there to influence their thoughts?
Because remember, Dali looks at him and says, I see a rhinoceros. And no offense to Owen Wilson, but when you look at his face with his nose, and I mean, I think he's a very attractive man, but he does sort of have that, and Dali is well known for his rhinoceros picture. So, you know, it's a very, it's really, really clever. And throughout the whole movie, every scene after scene is just, it's just beautifully done and really well written, well acted.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, so he one of the things in what you said about the earrings, that he finds this book, and it's supposed to be a journal from Adriana writing about what happened in her life. It's very old in present day, but it was written in the 20s, and she talks about this gentleman named Gil that she meets who gives her a pair of earrings. He ultimately goes and buys a pair. He gives them to her in the previous time frame. So it's just, and she actually takes them back. She's wearing them when she goes to the 1800s. So there's these things about moving through and how it's affecting. And, you know, we hear the bells on the bridge, and it, every time they toll, it's, something's happening. You know, there's time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, is it a moment in time? Is that the portal? When those, when that clock tower chimes, is that the portal where everything stands still?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
That was maybe
That's
too,
an unanswered question. Yeah.
Maybe I'm reaching, but I just kind of, it's something that just popped in my head. Okay.
Yeah,
the detective,
no, it could be.
Right? There's a detective that's following him. The father, Inez's father, wants to find out what's going on. And one of the things we see happen, which I thought was a very cute little tongue-in-cheek, is that the detective in his present-day clothes ends up getting caught up in some time warp, maybe in Louis the 5th century, which would be like the 14th century, right? So, and so now you have to wonder, when that happened, is this real? Or was that just a tongue-in-cheek joke from Woody Allen, like to make us wonder if it's real or not real?
No, I think it's real. Absolutely.
Because I also think that there's a very good argument for it being completely his own. He's writing all this and in his book because he's actually writing his own biography, but he doesn't know it at the time.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective, yeah. It could be that way, too. You know, there's so many unknowns, and you just kind of have to go with the flow in this movie.
And you go with it, which is...
And you do.
And that's why I think this movie is the movie of the summer, because you do go on a journey. Not only do you go on the journey to Paris, you go on a whole journey through time.
Yes, yes.
And
it doesn't matter that everything's perfect and in its place, and it makes complete sense. You just go. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful film.
It does take you away. There is no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get, we have 3 minutes, Sue.
Okay.
Wardrobe. Let's talk about wardrobe.
Oh, I mean, this is not my strong point, but everything was just so beautiful. Everything was, and it was so appropriate. And
in the 20s.
I loved it.
Is that what you, are you going to add in the 20s for that?
In the 20s, you know what, when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about in the 20s specifically.
I agree with you. Beautiful, beautiful costumes, just lovely, lovely. The sailor dress that Adriana wears in the one scene where she's walking through the city with Gil, and it's so beautiful, and it has all that little beading and just, it just fit her so, it's just beautiful, beautiful. But I thought it was interesting that it was a sailor dress, even though I know that was typical of some of the styles. She did wear other styles within the movie. The sailor dress, to me, indicated a journey.
Mm, sure.
Right? That she was going to go on a voyage, and eventually she does. So that was, I thought there was maybe some hidden meaning in that. And then the one thing, the present day outfits for Inez. I felt like it was, go ahead, say it.
I don't know. I felt like they were kind of strange. I felt like they were kind of 80s looking, actually.
80s looking and very come as you are. Like, come to the set in whatever you want to wear, Rachel McAdams. And we don't have any wardrobe budget for you. I just I don't know what it was. It was like, why is she wearing this man's shirt all the time? It just didn't, it didn't work for me.
Yes.
Sue, we're down to 1.5 minutes.
Okay.
Overall impressions?
I think it was a nice movie. It could be fun. It could be fanciful and light, or you could pick it apart and it could be a nice layered movie. I think it's a great time for anyone. Go for it, I say.
And I feel like this film, it's just for the viewer. It's you're in Paris, you're walking the streets, the same streets that Hemingway walked and the Fitzgeralds and all these other people before you, and then so many people who will come after you, and it was really captured. And in the end, he does get the girl, the bells toll, and he meets this wonderful girl who runs a nostalgia shop in Paris named Gabrielle, who he did meet earlier. We left that out. But it's in the end, he gets his happy ending. He is the Cinderella. He meets his princess.
Yes, absolutely.
So it was nicely wrapped up, very nicely wrapped up.
Yeah.
Okay, Susan. Thank you so much, as always.
Oh, thank you,
Lucy. I can't
wait
for the next. Oh, you're welcome. I can't wait for our next Chick Flick Chat. We're going to try to add more of these, listeners, so stay tuned. We have a lot coming up for the fall. I'm really excited. This is a good movie, and I'm glad we went and we did this and we chose it. Thank you, listeners, for sharing part of your busy day with us. We understand that every minute counts, and we hope our radio shows and lifestyle information at HereWeAreWithLucy.com help to make your life better, brighter, and easier on your way to running the world.